From the studios of EWTN, this is Open Line with today's host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In North America, call toll-free 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985 or send an email to openline@ewtn.com.
Well, Merry Christmas. This is Father Mitch Pacwa, Unleashed. Jack's not here with us, but we are to do a little bit of a Christmas special. In fact, instead of Jack, I'll have somebody else as a guest during this show. But we had to do this pre-record, so you won't be able to call in. But we'll certainly have an interesting discussion here in the studio. So great to be with you and help you get ready to celebrate Christmas. Now, one of the things that I would like us to address right away, and I've done this in past years, because we oftentimes hear people say various things that are not quite the case. So let's get started. Why do we celebrate Christmas on the 25th of December in the West? And why do we have 12 days of Christmas? What's going on there? Well, here's one of the standard things that you hear from people. First, a number of people will say, and they say it all the time, that Christmas was chosen on the 25th because there was an already existing festival of Sol Invictus. This was a pagan feast celebrated by the Romans, and that they had gift giving and things like that. So the Christians just appropriated it. Well, that's an interesting theory, and it seems to fit, except for the one problem. Christmas is known to have been celebrated on the 25th of December, 100 years before the Romans celebrated Sol Invictus. Sol Invictus was a very late feast. Now, there was one of the emperors whose name was Elagabalus. Elagabalus was an emperor. He became emperor in 218 AD. He was from Syria, and he practiced some of the religion of the Syrian deities, and he tried to bring them into Rome. Now, this man was very, very odd, and there's some of the things he did in public we just won't speak about. I have to say that for the Howard Stern Show or something. So this is, he was he married at least 5 times. Not all of them were ladies. And so this is one of the things going on with him. And he introduced the worship of Helios. Helios is the Greek word for the sun. But it was short-lived, as was Elagabalus. He was so crazy that he was assassinated, and his mom was killed. So then, what about Sol? He didn't worship Sol Invictus, though, just the sun, and that was short-lived. Sol Invictus was introduced into Rome during the reign of the Emperor Aurelian. Aurelian introduced this in 274 AD. And Christians had been celebrating Christmas on the 25th since at least the 180s AD. So almost 100 years earlier. And they didn't mention it as something, I tell you what, let's come up and we'll make up this feast day for Christmas. No, when they mention it, they mention it as something that, you know, just they took for matter of fact. Why? Because they had already been celebrating it earlier. It was not something that they were trying a new innovation. They were just mentioning something they had been doing. But Sol Invictus was introduced as a deity, a god, from the island of Rhodes. The Emperor Aurelian was looking for some kind of a feast, and he wanted to celebrate it on the 25th, and they found that Sol Invictus, which means the unconquered sun, S-U-N, was being celebrated in Rhodes, so they brought that to Rome to make it a festival in Rome. And the reason that that's important is this. It's not as if the Christians were picking up the date of December 25th in order to undo a Roman festival. It's just the opposite. The Romans invented a festival to put it in competition with the Christians who were celebrating Christmas. The Christians were already celebrating Christmas, and Aurelian, who was a persecutor, remember there were 10 persecutions of the church in the Roman Empire. Aurelian is one of the persecutors. And so when he introduced the festival, it was to be in competition with the Christians. We got a great feast. Don't go to their party. Come to ours. That's what he was trying to do. Similar things happened about 100 years, less than 100 years later, about 90 years later, when the Emperor Julian left Christianity. Now, part of his, why did he leave? He was trained in heresy. He was trained to be an Arian heretic, denying the divinity of Christ and denying the Trinity. And with that watered-down version of Christianity, he said, I don't believe in that. Well, neither do I. You know, I believe in the Christianity of the church and the Gospels. So he left Christianity and tried to reinstate paganism. And he did the same thing, trying to come up with various ways to counteract the Christians by creating, inventing pagan alternatives. Like one of the things the Christians did was a lot of charity for the poor. The Christians invented the concept of the hospital. That was done in Carthage in the time of St. Cyprian during a plague, and then again by St. John Chrysostom. They invented the Romans never had hospitals, and they also invented the orphanage. That because Christians were rescuing orphans, because usually there were kids put out to be eaten by wild animals. When the father said, I don't like that one, put him out there for the beast to eat. The Christians would go at night to the garbage dump and pick him up and raise him. And so they invented the orphanage. And he tried to come up with pagan competition, but it didn't work. Pagans didn't like to do that stuff, so he couldn't find anybody. Where the Christians just kept doing things to help those in need. Well, that's what Aurelian was doing, trying to come up with competition for the Christians. However, the feast of Sol Invictus is not really celebrated anymore. Christmas still is. Now, we still have folks who would like to have competition. That's why another festival was invented a few years ago out of clear blue, a pseudo-African festival that it was invented. But it was invented by some professor making it up. Whereas in Africa, the celebration of Christmas continues to grow as Christianity spreads more and more widely in Africa. And The same thing. Some people try to celebrate the winter solstice, you know, and they do pagan celebrations and pseudo-pagan because they're making it up. But they're all trying to be competition to the birth of Christ. And, I'm running out of time. I have to get back to you about why this date. So when we come back, I'll start that date and then introduce you to our guest. So we'll have you please stay with us, and we'll be back in just a little bit.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Today's Open Line is recorded, so no calls, please. If you'd like to send us an email for a future show, the address is openline@ewtn.com.
All right, welcome back. I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, Unleashed, and glad to be here with you. Just want to, again, this is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in, but did promise that I would give you the way that we figured out the date of Christmas. And it was this. As you know, we sing a song called The 12 Days of Christmas. That's from December 25th to January 6th. Those are the 12 days of Christmas. And the reason for that was people really weren't sure about the date of Christmas. So they devised the date based on the date of Christ's crucifixion, not Sol Invictus. Now, there in 30 and 33 AD, Passover started on a Friday, both years. And they didn't know which one it was. One of the years, the Passover began on Friday, March 25th. The other year, it started on Friday, April 6th. So they went 9 months ahead from March 25th to December 25th. And they wanted not to bring any connection with paganism, but they wanted to show the relationship between Christ's birth and death. He was born in Bethlehem in order to save us from sin. And so they connected it that way. They really didn't know the date of the birth, but they chose it on the basis of the days that they thought he died, and then went 9 months after that. Now, with April 6th, 9 months later, is January 6th. So in the East, many of the Orthodox still celebrate Christmas on January 6th. While in the West, we follow the date from March 25th to December 25th, and that's why we have Christmas on the 25th. And because, you know, there are so many Western Christians, you know, that's the more common date. But that's what we have. So that's how we got the date. It's all about Christ and really nothing to do with Sol Invictus. Now, we'll get to our guest. I'd like to introduce to you Alexander Skowronski. He actually is from here, but his parents aren't. They come from Poland, and you were born where?
I was born in Chicago, Illinois.
See? But here's the odd thing. I said this to him beforehand. How is it that he's a nice guy, and I think I lived there longer than you did. That's got to be the explanation, you know, the way I do. So, he doesn't have hardly any wise guy in him. I don't know how he can be born in Chicago. But at any rate, he's actually doing some cool things. What level of school are you in?
I'm a sophomore at the Altamont School.
Here in Birmingham, Alabama, correct?
Yes.
And You know, one of the things your school likes you to do are projects that are to help other people, right?
Yes.
All right, sort of service projects.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your service project. What were you been up to?
So we arranged for gifts for St. Nicholas Day to Ukrainian children in refugee centers to be delivered.
Yes. So this, just on the side, there's kind of a cool connection between your family and the area. What part of Ukraine was this refugee center in?
So there were two centers, and they were both in western Ukraine.
Okay.
And one of them was in a town called Tlumach. And it's actually the same city that my great-grandmother was born in. But at that time, it was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Well, so when your great-grandmother was born, it was Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And then, same when my grandmother was born. Your grandmother, my great-grandmother are the same age. And so, but then at the end of World War I, it was part of Poland.
Yes.
That was, there were a lot of Polish people living in that area, as well as Ukrainian people. Mm-hmm. And so it was part of Poland. But the border was shifted at the end of World War II by Joseph Stalin. He just sort of moved the border west to keep more of a distance between Russia and the Germans. The last visit of the Germans to Russia wasn't so nice, so he just wanted to put more Poland in between him and the Germans. So so now it's Ukraine, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So did you do this all by yourself?
Oh, no. I had lots of help. We, in fact, I did it with my partner, Akshay Gadamanugu.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
he's
at the
not
Altman
Polish.
School. No, he's Indian.
I was going to say too many vowels to be Polish. So, so he and you worked on this. Did you both come up with the same idea together, or who was the one with the big ideas?
So it was actually one of our friends in Western Ukraine. She's a doctor who treats wounded soldiers.
Okay.
And she's the one that actually came up with this idea. And we thought it was great and decided to, well, let's do it.
Nice, nice. So tell us, what did you do to get this going?
So all the way back in March when the war began, we were thinking, okay, so how can we help? We need to help somehow.
Sure.
And we found a lot of contacts, like people my age, 15, 16 years old, but also people 10, 11, 12. We decided to ask them, what do they need? Like, what do they want? Because they're fleeing from a war, and, you know, presumably they must need something. And what surprised us is that they didn't ask for money or, you know, oh, we need this, this, this. They said, we need, like, friends. We need psychological help. We need to feel that we're not alone.
Did they talk about life in the refugee camp very much?
Not really. They just mostly talked about how it used to be at their home and how they've been forced to flee, because many of the people were from Kharkiv and the Donbas region.
So that's in those regions. So folks, you know, remember their geography. We've been learning a lot more about Ukrainian geography than we ever learned before. Mm-hmm. And what we see is that that is the area of eastern Ukraine, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes. It's on the border between Russia and Ukraine, and it's always been a contested region.
Yeah, and especially, you know, in the time of Stalin, again, Ukraine has suffered horribly and unjustly. A good 6 million Ukrainians who did not want to live on communal farms were starved to death. Their crops and animals were just taken from them, and they were left with nothing, not even seed grain that was sold to the West. And 6 million people were starved to death in 1932.
Yeah, early 1930s.
Yeah, 1932 to 33, that winter. It was well before Hitler. did this. And so then Stalin brought a lot of Russian nationals, people who are Russian descent, to live in that area. And that's one of the reasons he's fighting over this. Mm-hmm. So they lived in that area. They are themselves Ukrainian, mm-hmm. living in that area, and they had to flee from the fighting.
Yes, they are Ukrainian, but also some Russian descendants, and even they are like shocked by what Putin is doing.
That's where humanity comes in rather than nationalism. Mm-hmm. Nationalism justifies anything the government does. That's not what these people are about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of them are trying to be just good Christians, good family people, mm-hmm. live a life. Mm-hmm. So did you start contacting them in terms of conversation?
Yes. So over the summer, we would meet once a week just to, you know, get to know each other, discuss what we like to do, our hobbies, and just like get a sense of what normalcy is like.
Do you speak Ukrainian?
I don't. I know just a few words, but I also speak Polish, so I can pick up a few words as
right,
well.
Right, right, right. There are a lot of words that are cognates between mm-hmm. Polish and Ukrainian, but a lot of them are also very different. Mm-hmm. It's easier to understand people from Slovakia if you're Polish than it is to understand Ukrainians. It's mm-hmm. moving a little bit away from, you know, mm-hmm. Polish. So what did you speak to them in?
So we spoke a mixture. So we know a lot of people in Ukraine that obviously speak Ukrainian, but they also thankfully speak English. So we could communicate with them. And also my father sometimes spoke a little Russian just to people that, mm-hmm. because some people especially in Eastern Ukraine don't speak Ukrainian. They only speak Russian. Mm-hmm. Many of them, they're learning Ukrainian, mm-hmm. but they're not fluent yet, so we still communicated a little bit in Russian, but we tried to avoid it.
And your father was born and raised in Poland, and he was born at the time it was still communist, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes, and Russian was actually mandatory in Polish schools.
Yes. Yeah, I went to Poland in 1979 for the first time, and, you know, everybody was studying Polish. But they also said when they got home, one of their parents' jobs was to teach them to unlearn it so they wouldn't know too much. It was a way for the Russians to try to do to Poland what they were doing in Ukraine, force them to become more Russified. They become more Russian in the way they think. Would that be correct? By the way, Alexander's mom is also here. Mrs. Skowronski is also from Poland and remembers those days. I don't know how she's so young, but it's one of those things that was part of the life. So your dad was able to use some of the Russian he learned mm-hmm. in these conversations with people who are all trying to learn these different languages. And I think that in itself is part of the story here. Mm-hmm. You know, that this, you know, Russian and Ukrainian are not the same language. Again, there are a lot of words in common, but it's a different culture, mm-hmm. different language group, correct?
Yeah. And I mean, Ukrainian has, it's always been a mixed region.
Oh, we got mixed time coming up. We'll get back to you, Alexander, after this break. We have to do another hard break, so you'll stay with us, right? And you all stay with us as well, and we'll continue to see what did they do for St. Nicholas Day.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Today's open line is recorded, so no calls, please. If you'd like to send us an email for a future show, the address is openline@ewtn.com.
All right, this is Father Mitch Pacwa, alone and unleashed in the studio, though I do have a guest and telling a pretty cool story of how he and his classmates at a local Birmingham high school have been making contact with other young people at a refugee camp in Western Ukraine. So how did this lead towards, you're talking to them in English, mm-hmm. helping them with their English, I assume.
Yeah, when we would meet weekly over the summer, it also gave them a chance to practice their English and mm-hmm. learn new words. Mm-hmm. So it was an opportunity for them as
cool.
well.
Cool.
Yeah.
But now it's winter mm-hmm. and you're getting closer to a big feast, that of St. Nicholas. That's the time for gift giving. Mm-hmm. over in Ukraine. That's part of their mm-hmm. tradition. How are you going to respond to that?
So, in about October, our friend from Western Ukraine, the doctor, she gave us the idea to deliver gifts for St. Nicholas Day. But we wanted to make it special for these children. We didn't mm-hmm. just want to buy a bunch of gifts and ship them. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to write a letter to St. Nicholas, like, for example, here in the United States, you do with Santa.
Right.
So we had them write letters in Ukrainian, and they sent them to us. But, of course, we don't speak Ukrainian. So we got our friends from...
You don't read it because it's in Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we got our friends that we were meeting over the summer to help us translate the letters. And as an added bonus, we also decided to give them a gift each for helping.
Oh, nice. So what? Tell us how this worked. They sent letters. How did you read them? If you don't read or speak Ukrainian, how'd you know what was in them?
So we scanned the letters and we sent a certain number each to each of our volunteers that helped translate that we were meeting over the summer for the letters from these refugee centers. And there was about 50 children in each refugee center. So there was
about 100 altogether.
Yes. Yeah. And in one of the centers, actually, in Yazlovets, it's a convent run by Catholic nuns.
And they're actually from Poland, correct?
Yeah, they were Polish nuns. And before the Second World War, they lived in a kind, it's like a medieval castle, almost. It's like built in a 16th century palace. Mm-hmm. And they lived there, but then in 1945, the Soviets forced them to move out. But then in the 1990s, the Ukrainian government, after it gained independence, allowed them to move back.
That happened to a number of religious institutions. I did a documentary on the same situation that the communist government, well, the Nazis pushed the Jesuits out of their school, made it into a prison. Then the communists came to Poland, made it into a hospital, made a mess of it. Then they gave it back to the Jesuits.
Yeah, and it kind of happened the same thing with the palace. Like, it was turned into, I don't know, like a warehouse or something. And when the nuns came back, they realized that it was, like, completely neglected.
Yep.
So at the beginning of the war, my family's foundation, the Fortuna Clinical Foundation for Ukraine, we helped them do some renovations. And also, the nuns are living alone for years, and suddenly they have a bunch of children as refugees, and they don't know what to do with them. So we helped them with the building of a playground for the children to just, you know, let them have fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this center and another center, again, in that town where my great-grandmother was born and my family lived, we helped... They sent the letters to us, and then we had them translated with our friends from Ukraine. And so we bought the gifts that they requested here in the United States. You know, we went to local stores, and we also ordered on Amazon. And thankfully, one of those stores is actually Snoozy's Kids, and they decided to give us a discount with all of the presents and toys once they learned what we were doing. Mm-hmm. So great thanks to them.
That's really a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing. Go on.
Yes, and so once we bought them, we needed to wrap them. And we got a lot of our friends from school to come help wrap these gifts. So, I mean, there were dozens of gifts, and we got our peers from the school to help us out with that. But we also learned another thing, that children in Ukraine don't just expect a gift. They expect a letter from St. Nicholas written to them personally, a handwritten letter. But thankfully, we had gotten in contact with a new friend of ours. She's a lady that recently moved from Ukraine here to Birmingham. And she agreed to write each letter individually to each child. So like if, for example, the boy wanted a drone, she would write, have great fun flying your drone and please don't crash into anything.
Tell about the kid and his cat. What did the kid with the cat want?
So the kid, he lived in eastern Ukraine, and at the beginning of the war, they had to flee, and he has a cat. But he didn't have a cat carrier. He had to leave the cat carrier behind at home. So we bought him a cat carrier. We found one, and we were able to get it packaged, and we went through a company that could ship directly to Ukraine without having to, without any huge costs. And also, for the nuns, for the convent, we shipped them to Poland, mm-hmm. because they also have a location in Poland. Mm-hmm. And the nun that went to pick up the gifts, she made sure, actually, that she had in her car with her a person of undisclosed name with a diplomatic passport, so they could just get through the border without much trouble.
Uh-huh. So this, now you're starting to sound like a Chicago wise guy. You know, that's where it all comes into handy. So, yeah, of course, the nun's mother house was in Poland. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to, and getting things into Poland mm-hmm. is, you know, relatively easy.
Yeah.
Compared to getting to Ukraine. So they had to drive across mm-hmm. to Western Ukraine and get these presents over to the folks. That's, you know, I liked the story of the kid with the cats. I also have a couple cats, but it's, you know, important to have your pets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that people, you know, especially young, when we're younger, having pets teaches you both responsibility and empathy, and that he cared to make sure that if he had to flee again, mm-hmm. you know, that he could do that. So that's also part of his, you know, concern and care. So that's very nice on his part. What about some of the other kids? I remember seeing, we can't show the video here on radio. It's good, but doesn't do any good. So you showed a video of this one little girl who wanted a doll that could talk. Mm-hmm. Did you find a Ukrainian talking doll?
So we went to the store here in Birmingham, and the only doll we could find was an African-American one, and we got like a dilemma, like should we send it to, like, because Ukraine and Eastern Europe especially doesn't have a lot of immigrants from sub-Saharan Africa,
right?
So we were pondering, like, do we send it? But we decided to ultimately send it, but we got a video from her and she seems to be very much enjoying it.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, I saw the video. To her, it's just her baby. You know, mm-hmm. it's her little doll baby, and she could care less what mm-hmm. color the doll is. She mm-hmm. just loves her little baby. Again, part of that teaching of children empathy mm-hmm. and just, you know, that's what, you know, kids do. They play mm-hmm. with dolls and, you know, learn how to be caring and solicitous and all that stuff by playing a game. And she didn't care about race, which is good. I heard one guy even say on the news the other day, an African-American gentleman, I said, I think they need to take the racial differences off of the census. Just stop all this racial difference. Just, we're Americans, and we're not going to, we're going to do what we can for each other. I don't know how that would work in terms of the sociology of our place, but you know, that idea of not really caring about the race as much as we care about the humanity of one another. This is a very important thing. How about some of the other kids? Any other good stories from the kids?
They also expect a Saint Nicholas to come and deliver the gifts to them.
Yeah.
So we hired a man to dress as Saint Nicholas and deliver the gifts. And mm-hmm. they learned songs to sing to him. They each wrote poems for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very, again, we can't show it here, but it was a very beautiful sight with Saint Nicholas, with all these beautiful decorations. And in the costume and with mm-hmm. handing out to each kid and the children singing, it was very beautiful.
Well, one of the things that is different from our St. Nicholas, our St. Nicholas has a little, you know, cap, you know, with a little fur trim, and he's got a red suit and belt and fur trim and a big beard and all that. But the real St. Nicholas was actually a Greek bishop in the city of Myra, which is in now southwestern Turkey. So how did the St. Nicholas look that they had in Ukraine? What did he look like compared to ours?
So almost a contrast. Like, for example, one could describe Santa as short and fat. Meanwhile, the St. Nicholas is tall and thin.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because he was an ascetic bishop, you know, he prayed and fasted a lot. They don't expect him to be fat. You know, that's after we had a high carb diet in the West. Mm-hmm. So, what else? What about he didn't wear the little cap with the pom-pom on it, did he?
No, he wore a bishop's hat.
Yeah. And in the East, the bishops wear a crown. Hmm. So he had a bishop's crown. He also was wearing a stole,
mm-hmm.
you know, because these are Eastern Christians. So there were the Ukrainian Greek Catholics and Ukrainian Orthodox,
mm-hmm.
you know, that two communities. You accommodated to that difference in community too, didn't you? Tell us about that.
Yes. So according to the Catholic calendar, which was used by the convent with the Polish nuns, they celebrate St. Nicholas Day on December the 6th.
Just like we do in the United States.
Mm-hmm. But according to the Orthodox calendar, they celebrate it on December 19th.
Right.
And that also helped us with the logistics of it, because we didn't have to buy all the gifts at once and send them at once. We could send first the first batch and then the second batch later.
So you sent the Catholic batch and then the Orthodox batch.
Yeah.
But they got it on their own celebration mm-hmm. of the feast day.
Yeah. In fact, we had just received pictures on December 19th.
Mm-hmm.
The second center had received their gifts, mm-hmm. which was according to the Orthodox calendar. And again, St. Nicholas delivers the gifts, the children are happy, and it's a beautiful sight.
Yeah, and they had a St. Nicholas also?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
They could have had the same guy. Because you know, the Orthodox and the Ukrainian Greek Catholics all, you know, wear the same kind of vestments. You know, they do most of the same liturgies, very similar liturgies, and same vestments, so they would look about the same. And this would be another thing I mentioned about Christmas being on December 25th or January 6th. And I think actually now the feast of Christmas is our January 7th in the Orthodox calendar for the Greeks and the Russians, Ukrainians. Why is that difference? Do you know?
I'm not as well versed with this part in
history.
Well,
let me explain it to you. Please. Matter of fact, this would be something worth pursuing. Have you studied any astronomy yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, do they offer astronomy at your school?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay, well, tell them that I said they should. They won't care. At any rate, here's what was going on. The human beings have taken a very long time of constant correction of the calendar. The reason for that is the Earth does not circle around the sun. It moves in an ellipse. And so it's a little bit longer one direction than the other. So it's a little bit more long than it is wide. So it's not a complete, a perfect circle. Our fellow Polish compatriot, Nikolai Kopernik, or often known in English as Copernicus, thought that it was a circle. He was incorrect. And Tycho and other astronomers, Kepler, did better, more careful observations because they had better telescopes, you know. And so what did that mean? That the Earth goes around the sun in an ellipse. So it's not 360 degrees. That would be a circle. It's 365.258. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple other, a little bit extra there. And quite frankly, the Jesuits were the ones who helped correct the calendar in Rome, because the Society of Jesus operates the Pontifical Astronomical Observatory. So the Pope has his own astronomy observatory. And they used the Tycho Brahe and Kepler and Galileo and all these other observers to correct the calendar. They could tell that it was getting, that the Julian calendar was off. He had a leap year, so he thought it was 365.25 days. But they noticed over a couple thousand years that it was off by a couple of weeks, and it kept getting farther off. That slight difference over a couple thousand years makes, you know, a big difference. So in the 1580s, I believe it was, they eliminated 2 weeks, because that's how far off it was, and came up with a corrected calendar that has not only leap year every 4 years, but every 500 years, they skip leap year. You're too young to remember, but in the year 2000, we skipped leap year. So there wasn't, because it's needed to correct the calendar. So the Orthodox still use the Julian calendar. They do this out of a strong connection with the tradition that this was the calendar Julius Caesar had corrected back about in the 40s BC. So I forget the year that he did that, but he oversaw the correction of the calendar so there would be a leap year, because their calendar was also getting off. And the Orthodox still follow the Julian calendar, but it's not quite as precise as the Gregorian calendar. They want to keep it for their religious uses and so on, and respect that. But the Gregorian calendar, named after Pope Gregory, is a lot more accurate. And that's a very, very important difference that shows up. And I understand they've been telling you that some of the folks in Ukraine are going to move to the Gregorian calendar. Mm-hmm. And probably just because they're upset with the Russians.
Yeah.
one way. You're dealing with a situation of very personal suffering, being uprooted. I mean, you wouldn't want to be moved from your home hundreds of miles away with all what you could carry. It's not that they could load up moving trucks, was it?
No. They had to just pack their suitcase and leave.
Yep. And so they're going through all that, plus just the regular stuff of childhood. And all of that, that's one level of the suffering. And you stepped in to alleviate. There are other levels that get into the geopolitical. And that's for when you get older and you run for president or something. But until then, we can help with these smaller human issues. Any other cool stories that you have from some of the kids that got these presents?
So one of them is that a girl fleeing Kharkiv, I believe, had to leave her guitar at home.
Oh, and yeah.
She really wanted to keep on playing the guitar. And the lady that was the head of the center in Tlumach personally asked us, could you please get us a guitar for her? And of course we agreed. And we actually got our friend in Eastern Ukraine, or actually the mother of our friend. I spoke with her and we actually communicated in Polish, because she also speaks Polish.
Mm-hmm.
And we arranged for us to send the money to her and she would buy a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And we made sure we would choose the best guitar available and we gave it to her.
Cool.
And she just sent us a picture of her with the guitar.
Yeah. Again, adding, that's one of the other things too. Ukrainian people still have a very lively society of singing together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, a little hobby sit up in your room. And people actually do sing together. One of the things your father, you might have some comments on this. Your father had mentioned that folks who now no longer have so much electricity, how much electricity do they get each day?
Only a few hours each day with mm-hmm. the recent strikes on energy infrastructure. And in fact,
by strikes you mean the missile strikes?
Yeah, the missile strikes on energy infrastructure. And this brings me to another point, and this is why we wanted to do this project. And I said this in Western Ukrainian news. A Western Ukrainian news channel did a little piece about us.
Mm-hmm.
They went to one of the centers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that we wanted to show that Putin can bomb hospitals, he can bomb power stations, he can bomb residential buildings. But he will never, ever be able to bomb St. Nicholas, and he will never be able to break the spirit of the Ukrainian people.
I don't think a truer thing could be said. You know, that this is going to be, my mother often would say to me, partim polakim. You know, that she would say that I was a very stubborn little boy. Maybe that was true. maybe it's still true. But, stubbornness is something that is a vice when it goes to wrong ways. But in these kind of situations, it's not stubbornness.
Mm-hmm.
It's this fortitude. It's a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're seeing in these and helping mm-hmm. to support the fortitude of the young folks in who will be your peers. You'll grow up
mm-hmm.
As peers in the same world.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important thing to help your peers because in the future, I suspect that there'll be another kind of strengthened relationship with the United States, not only among politicians and business people, but I suspect also culturally.
Yes, and that's another reason why we wanted to do this.
Go ahead, finish.
That we wanted to show when they grow up that we are with them, mm-hmm. that America is with them, the West is with them.
Fantastic. Well, look, want you to have a wonderful and Merry Christmas. be generous to those in need, love your families, spend time with them, and enjoy these beautiful holidays. May Almighty God bless you all, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. God bless you.